Much of our study will begin there from Job chapter 1. We, of course, recognize our nation, much like a month ago, paused for Mother's Day, a time in which we honor and appreciate godly mothers, mothers that have been a great encouragement and a great strength to us. The world pauses, of course. We should rephrase it. We're thankful for all of our mothers. We're especially thankful, though, for our godly mothers that give a great example to us and to our children, to our wives, grandmothers, others who have great influence on us and our families. Much the same way our world pauses today and we think about fathers and also the influence that they've had on our lives, the things that they have done in order to help our homes, our families, and we're thankful for that. We oftentimes think of Job, maybe, in various areas, and maybe not necessarily in the light that we'll think about him tonight. I know I had not necessarily until just recently. He clicked with me three various things with Job as a father. And how do we often picture Job? I often picture him as one that was patient, one that endured, one that was faithful to God even in the midst of great trials. We think of verses such as James chapter 5 and verse 11. We count them happy that endure. You have heard of the patience of Job, the endurance of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. We think about Job and all of the trials that he faced in life, how here was a man that lost everything in a very short period of time. On top of that, was smitten with great pain as he had to endure a physical ailment. Maybe even on top of that, we look at the affliction brought upon by his family, his loved ones, his friends, as even many of them turned against him. And yet through it all, Job maintained an integrity before God and a trust before God. In fact, as we go through the book of Job, you'll see a great character growth that occurs in Job. And how that by the end time we reach the end of the account of Job, here is a man that has had everything taken away from him, and then added back unto him greater than he had even in the beginning. And so we think of Job in that sense. We think of him as a faithful man through patience. And yet it's those characteristics that make Job an example of faithfulness that also make him such a great father. We actually, when we consider it, don't know a lot about the interaction between Job and his children. And yet there are three particular statements that I think shine a great light upon Job as a father that should be examples for us all. And the first, of course, is that Job loved his children. I think again, well, you don't know a lot about how he interacted with them. Oh, we don't know a lot about the things that he did with them. No. But think about how they're listed here. Job chapter 1 and verse 1 gives us an introduction to Job, the man. But then what's the very next thing? We're told about his children. Here, before ever, we're introduced to Job as a man of great possessions. Here's Job introduced as a man who loved his children. Job chapter 1 and verse 2, "And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters." It goes on in verse 3 and talks about his great substance. Here was a man of wealth. Here was a man that had great possessions. And yet before any of those things are listed, here Job's children are mentioned. I think that gives us a picture of a man that loved his children, a man that placed a proper emphasis upon his children. Rather than honoring the material things of life, here was a man that first honored his family, his children. I think Satan even knew something about that. For when the blows would start falling upon Job, and God had allowed Satan to try Job, to bring these afflictions upon him, we began to see not his children first attacked, but rather his possessions are first attacked. Report comes, Job, all of your oxen, all of your donkeys, they have been killed, and all of your servants. I have escaped with my life to come and report this unto you. Barely before that servant could finish, here comes in another. Job, your sheep have been destroyed by fire. And I have been allowed to escape. All of the other servants are dead, but I've come to tell you, to be able to report this thing unto you. Barely has he finished, the next messenger comes in. Job, all of your camels, and again, all of your servants, they've been killed. They're no more. And I have escaped to tell you. And then, his most valuable possession, that which was saved for the end, that which would surely bring the greatest blow upon Job, is found in verse 18 and 19. While he was yet speaking, there came also another, and said, "Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness, and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And I only am escaped alone to tell thee." In verse 20, Job arose and rent his mantle, shaved his head, and fell down upon the ground and worshipped. He said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. I don't think Job has a proper understanding. In fact, I know he doesn't have a proper understanding at this point of all that's going on in his life. And yet even at this moment in time, Job is going to maintain his trust in God. And so think about it. Here, first, before his possessions, his children are mentioned. And yet they're going to be the last that are attacked, the last report that's going to come in here after his possessions. You think about it, if Satan wanted to deliver this blow unto Job, it's going to be blow after blow after blow, and then the final one, the big one. As we say, the straw that broke the camel's back. Here, Job, even your children are dead. Here was a man that loved his children. Loved his children or prized them above his possessions. Though he was a rich man, though he was well known, it seems, I think, we could look at Job and see a man that very likely honored his family above all of those physical possessions that he had in life. And oh, how we should be thankful for such fathers. Fathers that love their children. The psalmist speaks of this in Psalm 127, verse 3 through 5. He says, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is His reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gates." Here is the honor that we should recognize of having children in our home. They are a heritage of the Lord. And blessed are the one whose house is full of children. And fathers, we need to recognize that children are indeed a blessing in our home and a blessing that have come from God. We need to love our children in appreciating them. What the psalmist tells us here, but also as we love our children, not only in appreciating them, but recognizing the charge that they've been given unto us. He says they are as arrows in the hand of a mighty man. Not just have you been given a wonderful blessing here of God, but you've been given a great charge of God. If you're going to love that child, both of those have to be recognized. That indeed I appreciate, I love my children, but that love also is going to show me a responsibility unto them. They've been given unto my hand to guide and direct, to help them learn the ways of this world, to help them learn how to deal in the family, how to deal in society, to help them learn, even as we'll notice in a few moments, to know God. All of those things they've been given into our hands to guide and direct. And how are we, particularly as we study fathers, but how are we as parents going to guide and direct? How are we going to show that love unto them? is it not going to be in how we treat them? See, it's going to be more than just words. Oh, I love you. It's going to be more than just hugs and kisses. It's going to be more than just trying to give them things. But what are we doing with them? And what are we doing for them that really shows that love, that compassion, and that concern? I'm afraid, unfortunately, that many in our society have lost the idea that loving children requires something beyond just those words or just those possessions that we might give them. The psalmist recognized here they've been given into our hands, yes, as a blessing, as a heritage from God. But if I'm going to truly love them, it's going to require direction. It's going to require discipline. It's going to require me teaching them, working with them, laboring with them to help them grow. I think our society largely looks around and doesn't appreciate that. We can look at so many different examples. I'm sure Cammie has seen more of cases of this than she would care. Anybody that works with children of troubled homes. And oftentimes those troubles begin not with the child, but because of the home that they've been brought up in. And we look sadly, many at times it seems some parents only look at the children as an inconvenience. Something that I have to deal with whenever it comes up, but I'd prefer not to. I'd rather leave them to their own and not really bear any responsibility. We have many that have fathered children, but sadly, they have been no father to that child. They haven't cared for the needs and haven't cared for the concerns of that child. Other times we see maybe not that particular case, but maybe children are looked on as nothing more than playthings. Some little bundle of joy when they came along, but you know, they just become too much of a hassle as they grow older. Oh, I want them maybe to be my best friend. I want them to love me. And I want them to think I'm the greatest thing that ever came along. And so how am I going to do that? And we think here they're just something that I can and play with when it's convenient, but I'm mainly going to leave them to themselves to learn about the things that they should know. I'm going to leave them to themselves as far as growing up and learning in this world. So really what we're doing is showing a great lack of love. Other times we might show that lack of love and having the exact opposite approach that Job did here. Instead of valuing his children above his possessions, many times we can look around and find those that value their possessions above their children. First and foremost, sometimes that's done by trying to shower our children with any and everything they ever desire. So they grow up spoiled and rotten. Far too many cases of that we could look around and see. But maybe it's also in that instead of caring for my children, I'm more interested in the possessions that I can gain in life. I'm interested in me, and so they're put on the back burner while I look for the things of this world. And I turn around and they're gone. And I turned around and oftentimes they've turned out much like me. And so can we really show a love to our children without showing a concern? Without showing direction? Without teaching? Without even discipline? And I'm speaking here both of corrective and proactive may be the word I'm looking for there. That it involves both, yes, first teaching, but then when that teaching isn't followed, sometimes we need that corrective discipline to get them back on the right track. That's going to be a true measure of love here. Solomon, the writer of most of the book of Proverbs, certainly had a love, he had a concern for his son. And in so doing, he wanted to teach his son. He wanted to guide him in the things that were right. And that's going to continue to be an example, a test. If we truly love our children, are we willing to put forth that effort to guide and direct them? We find written in Proverbs 29 and verse 15, "The rod and reproof give wisdom. The child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." The child that is left to gain his own wisdom, to go his own way in the world, is usually faced for a great destruction and a troubled life. Instead, there should be this guidance and this good direction and discipline in their lives to help bring about wisdom in their life. Maybe even a stronger phrase would be found in Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 24. He that spareth the rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth betimes. Oh, not just because you have a whim, not just because you felt like it, but because you truly have the best interest of that child in your heart. If you leave them alone, give them no guidance, direction, if you just want to be this best friend to them, and so refuse to ever have any sort of correction in their lives, Solomon doesn't say that's a test of love. He says the person that does that to his child hateth his child, because he's not doing him any favor. He's not helping him along. The Hebrews writer would agree with this in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 7 and 8. As he said, if you endure chastening, God dealeth with you as sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? If you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Here particularly, the Hebrews writer is going to turn this and look at how we should be thankful for the guidance, for the direction, for the instruction that God gives us, even the chastisement, the discipline that we receive of God. We should be thankful for those things because it shows us the love of God, the concern that He has for us, and it should urge us on to faithfulness. But He's going to begin here first in that verse 7 and 8 as He looks at the role of a parent. He says, has He really shown you any love? Has He really helped you if He hasn't chastised you? If He hasn't guided and directed you in the ways that are right and the ways that are good? That's no son if He refuses to do that. He hasn't truly shown love. If a father is going to show love unto his children, that guidance is going to be there. Again, we need more fathers that are willing to do that even in our lives. I believe this is the primary view or focus of Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Many have looked at that as maybe a general guide, a general rule in terms of faithfulness. If we teach a child to be faithful unto God, then he will not depart from it in his youth. And unfortunately, we see far too many examples that go contrary to that. We can try all our lives to help our children to be faithful, and yet when they grow up, they're going to make their own decisions. It might be a general rule in that direction that certainly the child that is taught to know God, to love God, to follow God, has a much better beginning in life than the one that knows nothing of God. But I believe what the Proverbs writer is there reminding us is that if we're going to truly love our children, then we're going to train them in the way that they should go. The idea there in the original is in the bent, in the way that they are naturally bent or naturally inclined. That's not always going to be easy. What he's telling us there is we're going to have to spend time with that child. We're going to have to know that child. We're going to see how that child is inclined and adjust our working with that child. It might be in his particular attitude. We see different children have different dispositions. We hear parents talking about how with one child, I could maybe, pardon the expression, beat them till they were blue and it would have no impact on them. A spanking did nothing for them. We had to find other things, maybe taking away certain things that they valued. Oh, with another child, I could just look in their direction with a stern face, and they would break out in tears and be so apologetic. You see, there were different attitudes of each child. Maybe part of the idea here. I'm going to learn that child. And that's going to take time. It's going to take effort. It's going to take diligence. But I'm going to work with that child in the way he's meant. I'm going to work with that child even in the way he meant, maybe in sense of how they're inclined. The things that they're naturally interested in. And I'm going to help mold them into the people that they can be so that they can be all that they can be. And that's going to take effort on my part as a parent. And that's going to show love. It's going to show compassion. It's going to show concern for them. And I believe that's even at least a small glimpse that we see Job as a father that loved his children. And we need more fathers like that even today. Well, we could also go on, and another glimpse into the life of Job is a man that cared for the spiritual interest of his children. Again, not a huge glimpse we get here, but nevertheless, if we go to Job chapter 1 and verse 4, we have a glimpse here of the concern, actually verse 4 and 5 here, that he had of his children. And his son went and feasted in their houses, everyone on his day, very likely a birthday there, sent out and called for their three sisters to eat and drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their fasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." And this did Job continually. And so here was a man that was offering sacrifices on their behalf. We have to understand this in the context of the period of time in which Job is living. I believe it's very likely here Job is living in the patriarchal age, based on this passage where it talks of offering sacrifices on their behalf, based on the time frame in which he appears to live, based on the age to which he appeared to live to, was a much older age than would later be seen. Based on certain expressions or phrases that were used, many have believed that Job lived maybe around the time of Abraham or slightly before. And so living in a patriarchal age, here he had the spiritual responsibility of his family in a very real way. He served, if you will, as the priest and the prophet, the guide for that family in directing them, as the chief overseer of that family. And so we see here in this capacity possibly him offering as a priest on behalf of his children, in their behalf unto God. Why? Because he cared for them. He cared for their souls. He didn't want them to be separated from God. He certainly wanted them. He knew God. He knew the ways in which God desired them to serve Him. And he was willing to offer those sacrifices even on their behalf. And that continued to show his love for them. You see here, the love of a parent, not just we need to be concerned with showing love and concern and raising them in a physical sense, making sure they have nutrition, making sure they grow in knowledge, making sure they're socially adjusted and all of these things. But even more importantly, that they are growing spiritually. I mentioned a few moments ago that passage from from Psalms 127. And I want to back up and see how that psalm began, because it's going to remind us, unless the Lord is the foundation of our house, the Lord is the foundation of anything that we set forth to accomplish, if that's not the case, we're setting ourselves up for failure, and that's true for the family as well. That yes, here children are an heritage of the Lord. They're set in our hands as arrows that we need to guide and direct. So we go back to Psalm 127 in verse 1. "Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh but in vain." You can put all of your effort forth, but if you're not trusting in God, if you're not relying in Him, if He isn't the foundation of that which you're trying to accomplish, you're setting yourselves up for failure. And the same is true for our families. If we're not guiding and directing them in spiritual interests, oh, they may be socially adjusted. They may grow to be well accepted in society. But what of the end of their lives? What have they gained? Though they gained the whole world and lose their soul, have they really gained anything? Or have they lost greatly? And so here was Job, a man that cared for the spiritual interest of his family. Think about another great example. Do you remember why Abraham, at least part of the reason Abraham was chosen? That here was a man that would follow God. A man unto whom God's word could appear and say, "Leave your home, and you travel unto a land that you know not. A land to which you've not been. A land that I will show you." And Abraham in faith would set out. But not just because he was a man of faith, but God knew something else as well. God knew that he would be a faithful family leader as well. In Genesis chapter 18 and verse 19, God would say of Abraham, I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him. And they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. I've chosen Abraham as my man, as the one that I'm going to guide and direct in looking forward to setting up this great nation of whom I will bless, and looking forward to setting up my eternal kingdom through which Jesus Christ will come to die and to establish His church. It's going to begin here with Abraham, a man that's faithful, and even more so than that, because I know he's going to teach his children to be faithful. He has their spiritual interest at heart. But he's going to teach them to know God, to fear God, to follow Him all the days of their lives. And so I want Abraham. And much like Job, much like Abraham, we need to be those kinds of fathers and those kinds of parents even today. As was read a moment ago in the Scripture reading tonight, Ephesians 6 and verse 4. Ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Our goal in disciplining and in guiding them is not to make them hate us, is not to be overbearing, but to teach, to guide, to instruct, to correct in those things and those ways that are right. Ye fathers. The idea here may be even of a scope of parents, but it lists who's in charge of that family. Who has the primary responsibility here of the spiritual focus of that family? It's the father as the head of the household. Far too many homes, the mother, if there is a spiritual interest in that home, the mother is the driver of that spiritual interest. But God said, you fathers, you be the leaders, you be the guiders, you be the directors in setting forth the spiritual focus of your family, that you can bring up those children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, that they know God, that they know His way, that you teach them in such a way that they will desire to know God. Oh yes, they're going to make their own choices, they're going to make their own decisions, but you do everything you can while they're in your influence to teach them, to guide them, to direct them in the ways that are right. Because again, if I truly love my children, I want what is best for their spiritual interests. Again, a belief I think, or a trait I believe that we can see even in the man of Abraham. Excuse me, of Job. And then finally, one other thing. Why Job was such a good father, or set before us as an example of a father, is because he left for them a great example. I want you to think of the commendation given unto Job. And imagine being a child in Job's house. Imagine having this example set before you of a great man. A man in whom it can be said, Job 1 in verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. That man was perfect and upright and feared God and eschewed evil. He walked in all of those ways that were right. He followed God. A man even of whom the Lord Himself would say in Job chapter 1 and verse 8, have you considered my servant Job? That there is none like him in all of the earth. A perfect and upright man. One that feared God and eschewed evil. This wasn't simply Job's opinion of himself. This was even God's opinion of Job that he would be willing to express unto Satan. That here God has such confidence in Job that he would place him here as an example of faithfulness. Satan, you can't turn him from me. He loves me. He's going to follow me. Satan is going to charge God and Job foolishly. He's only loving you because you've blessed him so richly. By the time we reach the end of the chapter or the book of Job, there shouldn't be any question left. Is Job going to follow God whether he's richly blessed or whether he's debased? Oh yes. He's going to stick with God. And he's going to trust in Him. And so what an example to set before his children. What else could he give them? What better gift, maybe I should word it that way, could he give them? Think again of who Job was. He was a man of great stature. He was a man of great importance. He was a man to whom others looked to. He was a man, we'll find as you go through the various discussions of the book, he was a man that cared for others and helped others. He was a man unto whom others looked up to. Not only that, we begin to get the idea even here in Job chapter 1. As you begin to look at his possessions, he was a rich man. But all of that, that he could have passed on to his children, the greatest thing that he could give them was to be a good example of a faithful man before God. We can look at so many examples in our lives of men and women that have been great examples, that have encouraged their children to be likewise good examples. Sadly, much of our society values not that example, but it values, what are you going to pass on to me? What inheritance am I going to have after you're gone? Am I going to have a nice piece of property that I will inherit? Will I have a nice bank account that I will inherit? Will there be any life insurance money that I might be able to look forward to? Instead of looking back on the influence of that parent and saying, I recognize they gave me a great example. And really, there are many things that people live, but the greatest thing or the worst thing that we leave behind is our example. Oh, we think about Jesus Christ, and we'll pose this question, what was the greatest thing that Jesus left behind Him after He ascended unto heaven? And I understand Jesus gave us many things. He came to earth, He gave His life for us, He gives us great spiritual blessings that are available in Him. But I'm speaking specifically of the things that He left behind from the time that He was on earth. Did He leave behind material possessions or other such things? I know He established the church, and we can look at such things. But largely, I'm going to say the greatest thing He left behind Him was His example. Because He's going to be set forth in Scriptures as one that we can look to as our example. As Peter would speak of, in even hereunto were you called, because Christ suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in His footsteps, 1 Peter 2 and verse 21. That we are to walk as He did. That He gives us an example of faithfulness, even in great suffering. Would we be willing to follow that example? Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, Philippians 2 and verse 5. You look to His example of how He lived. We could think of others. Even the Apostle Paul, who would be able to say of himself, 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, be followers of me, even as I am also of Christ Jesus. Yes, Christ is our great example, but you mark those that walk after that same example, that they'd be an encouragement to you. That's what he tells the Christians here at Philippi, Philippians chapter 3, verse 17. Brethren, be followers together of me, and mark them, take note of them, which walk so as you have us for an example. You take note of people that are examples of great faithfulness. You learn from them. You mark their ways, and you strive to live lives that are like them. Oh, and that could be said of many of the or of the apostles, so many great faithful people that have lived in the first centuries that we have known even in our own lives. Can also be said of maybe some of our fathers or some maybe elders in the church, deacons in the church, workers of the church that we've known, maybe still know today, that set before us great examples. But unfortunately, that also works in the opposite direction. That maybe the worst gift somebody gave was their example. We can easily say names such as Jezebel and Ahab, Judas. Images began coming to our mind, not of a positive example they left behind, but a negative example. The best thing we can do is learn from them not to be like them. Again, we unfortunately know many fathers, many people that have lived through the ages that have left that sort of negative impact. I'm currently reading a book about certain philosophers who set forth their ideas, and some of them claimed, oh, I'm not setting this before you to change the world. And yet that was going to exactly be the impact that their philosophies had. and most not for the better. Because they set forth an image of God, they set forth an image of man that was exactly contrary to God's Word. It didn't help the world. Through their influence, they brought great trouble upon the world. And so, yes, the greatest thing Job could give his children here was a good example that they could follow. What we need to remember is to honor such people, to follow such good examples. But also, I think we need to remember, will we be such examples? Will my children be able to say of me? Will my grandchildren be able to say of me? Will my friends, my co-workers, my neighbors be able to look back on me and say, you know, the greatest thing they gave me was a great example that I could follow. And I want to honor them and their lives by striving to follow that same example. The only way that's going to happen at the end of our lives is if that's the kind of life we're living right now. Even as Paul urged us to think about in Philippians chapter 2, verse 15 and 16. You live as blameless, harmless, the sons of God without rebuke, even in the midst of a crooked and a perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. Why? Because you're holding forth the word of life. You be that example of one that is faithful. You be that light that shines in a world of darkness as one that's striving to follow God. And then you're going to be this kind of example. Then you'll be able to teach your children, not just in word, but in deed. I love you. I care for you. I'm guiding you in those things that are right in this world. I love you. I care for you. And so I'm guiding you in the things that are right as far as seeking after God. Your spiritual interest in